Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 6, Episode 61, and it's Broncos Week. And we will have Denver Post beat writer Troy Rank join us for the last 15-20 minutes of the show, breaking down the Broncos, getting the latest on Brock Osweiler and the Broncos situation as their loss to the Oakland Raiders has made these next two games against the Steelers and the Bengals more important in the sense that they have not locked up their division. And if they lose them both and the Chiefs win out, well, it's going to be the Chiefs' division. But for the Steelers, of course, they control their own fate here the rest of the way, Dave, as they're coming off the 33-20 win over Cincinnati, raising the record to 8-5. And not only is the win a really big deal coming out of Cincinnati with the victory, Dave, but the team's relatively healthy going into this game against Denver.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Mike Tomlin, during his press conference on Tuesday, really only one name that he mentioned. That was Mike Mitchell with the shoulder. Mike Mitchell, of course, played most of that game. I think he suffered that injury on that touchdown, that deep ball to A.J. Green, when both he and Antoine Blake missed that tackle there. But, you know, he stayed in the game. He did miss some snaps at some point. Then, of course, he was pulled from the game during the final Bengals offensive possession when the game was in hand, as Robert Golden came into the game at that point. So Mike Tomlin said he's probably going to, I think, the quote was be uncomfortable this week, but it doesn't sound like Mike Mitchell's in any real jeopardy of missing the game Sunday against the Broncos. And Bud Dupree, Mike, I think Mike Tomlin was asked about him later on in the press conference. He had suffered a tailbone / lower back injury against the Bengals on Sunday. You know, I don't know why Mike didn't mention him initially, but I guess end all do all. Just going to have to watch his practice participation this week. I wouldn't be surprised if both Mike Mitchell and Bud Dupree sit out on Wednesday. And, of course, that first injury report of the week will come out later on today.
Yeah. And, Dave, I guess out of the press conference, let's start from the back to the front. And kind of the last question Mike Tomlin got asked was about the – not just the extracurricular stuff, but the – antics before the game, the social media stuff. And I really do think Mike Tomlin has handled this pretty well. Just saying, you know, he just asks his guys to be professional. And he expects them to be professional. Now, that doesn't mean everything they did was professional. I don't think, Marcus Gilbert needs to be on social media taunting the Bengals. Although I'm sure Steeler fans got a kick out of that and got a good laugh out of it. Probably, you know, in the long run, it's probably not a useful thing, but again, as I said on Monday, I went after the Bengals in the podcast and said, I think they were largely responsible for it. I think Vontaze Burfict was the guy who was egregiously out of the line. I think the NFL is gonna end up finding him here. We keep seeing on national stories that they're looking into the low hit on Ben that wasn't even penalized. The one thing I do want to say is, again, I don't want to give the Steelers a pass here because they're not choir boys, but that's the nature of the game. The one play, Dave, that did annoy me was, again, Mike Mitchell celebrating the hit on Tyler Eifert. Now, Mike Mitchell didn't know he gave him a concussion, but he did give him a concussion and knock him out of the game. But he was so busy preening it to the Steeler bench, and this was after an 18-yard catch for a first down up the seam, and then he gets personal foul call on him, which was debatable because Eifert's going down. It's really difficult to hit a guy at all when he's going down with his head and you're coming from that direction. But he's so busy preening at the bench when the guy caught an 18-yard pass up the seam. And I know we talk about Mike Mitchell all the time, and I know it gets old, but he continues to do it. And that was the one thing on the Steelers side that I thought was just completely ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know, I guess it wouldn't be overly surprising if Mike Mitchell got fined this week, but I know there's a still shot out there from someone, I think, at Cincinnati.com that shows, you know, helmet to helmet, you know, but as you said, it's kind of hard from all the replay angles that I've seen to tell whether or not, you know, the split second as Eifert's, you know, trying to avoid the hit, leaning over, and Mike Mitchell already having his head lowered and all like that. So yeah, I mean, it's like Cordarrelle Patterson a few weeks ago, you know, high stepping it up and hold out the football on that punt return for a touchdown when the Vikings were down, I don't know, what was it,
35-0.
Yeah, 35-0 at the time. There's a time and place for everything. How many times have we talked about Mike Mitchell, you know, during this year, though, and his antics, though? And I pretty much summed it up, I think, as saying, that's just Mike Mitchell. I mean, we could sit here and talk about it. We could spend a whole show out about it, David, but is it really going to make a difference? I mean, he's not going to stop doing what he's doing, obviously.
No, and the other, I mean, it was just amusing because – Will Gay tried to sit another route and jump it on A.J. Green, and A.J. Green went down the sideline, and this is the throw McCarron missed, which would have been a big gain or possibly a touchdown. And Mike Mitchell celebrated that, too, and he taunted the crowd. I'm just amazed at what the guy does. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It's just who he is, David.
Yeah,
I
wish I had asked Mike Tomlin about it and just asked – Mike, do you just kind of shake your head and say that guy needs to have that level of emotion to play at the level that he needs to play at? Or is there anything to say? And I didn't ask it, and I wish I had.
Well, you know, he'd tell you, it'd be like the his comment after the Antonio Brown song.
Take the suck the life out of it?
Yeah, you life sucker, David Todd, you.
Suck the life out of that one. I mean, no, you know, I will say, Mike can say whatever he wants, but not one person raised the Will Gay celebration, because I think everybody was pretty amused by the whole thing. If you're going to do it, man, go over the top. Get your money's worth.
And I suspect he'd probably be fine. Yeah, the funny thing is A.J. Green, I think, got his money's worth as well, too, but he didn't even get a flag.
Now,
you know,
we were debating, or I heard it debated, as to whether, Cam Newton gives the ball into the crowd, other guys throw the ball into the crowd, and what they get is fined for the football. I think it's like, you know, it used to be $500. I don't know what it is now. Is there a rule against kicking the ball into the crowd? So is it a fine or is it a penalty? And I hadn't thought about it, but I don't actually know the answer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Remember, who was it? Was it LeGarrette Blount? A couple years ago, threw it during a preseason game against Carolina, threw one into the stands, or was that the second or third game of the season? I can't remember if he got penalized or just fined that way as well. That's a good question. We'll have to look that up. You know what? You know my view on it, David, as long as it's not visibly taunting another player, you know, standing over top of them or in the face type stuff, I think they should let all that shenanigans go. You know, I mean, and this is the old, you know, no fun league argument. I'm sure. I mean, you remember growing up, the whole Billy White Shoes Johnson, and I mean, you used to look forward to touchdowns because of not only the scoring, but the celebration afterwards. You know, and I don't so mind, you know, Ocho Cinco for all those years. Now, obviously, you don't want them out there, you know, going TO and having a pin in their sock and using props and all like that, but. You know, punting the ball or throwing the ball up into the crowd
Shoes Johnson stuffed. I mean, yeah, all for that.
Or doing the dance that Will Gay did. And I mean, come on, you know.
I think we're generally in agreement with that kind of stuff. I mean, if it's a scoring play and you just made it happen, have at it.
Right, because, I mean, you could view spiking the football depending on the proximity you are to another player – as taunting, right? I mean, how many times has Rob Gronkowski, you know, done that with a player right there in front of them there, you know, spiking it right in their face sometimes in the end zone. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's an argument that's going to go on forever. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure A.J. Green will be fined, and, we'll just go from there.
Okay, so coming out of the – out of the press conference, asked Tomlin about the fact that Boykin didn't start as the slot corner, and he gave us nothing. He basically said, you know, we have our reasons for doing things. We're not going to tell you why we do them. And said, you know, all the guys are going to be used in the rotation going forward. So he wasn't going to throw anybody under the bus, and he wasn't going to apologize for his, you know, how the rotation went or – give us any insight as to why Boykin started the game, didn't start the game the first three series and didn't play until after Blake got torched. And same thing about Lawrence Timmons. I asked the first time he came off the field this year, and the Steelers went dime, and he did concede that it was, you know, basically specific to Cincinnati, but we may see more of that going forward. And so I would expect, you know, if they were to play New England again this season, you'll see some dime. I don't know that any of the teams the remainder of the season, maybe Cleveland with Duke Johnson and Barnridge, maybe they cause the Steelers to go dime, but I'm not sure we'll see it against Denver or Baltimore.
Yeah, and if you do see it, you're not going to see it many snaps during a game anyway. In fact, Mike Thomas told you he wasn't going to get into the minutia. That was a Mexican boy band, right? No, that was Menudo. No, I'm just kidding there. The minutia of specifically why we choose to employ him, when we choose to deploy him, him being Antoine Blake. And I wrote in the follow-up post to that on Tuesday, David, Tomlin doesn't have to give us the minutia. I mean, because he's pretty much spelled it all out already for us in these last couple of games since Boykin's been in there. It seems like, you know, the first two or three series, he has Blake out there in all situations, both base and nickel. And then once Blake gets a little bit of burn underneath him on special teams, in comes Boykin for most of the game. And the interesting thing is we've had basically, you know, two blowouts here back to back. So, you know, it's hard to judge how much on the back end of these games a guy like Antoine Blake would actually play if the game was close. You see what I'm saying? Because, you know, you had an injury. You had William Gay leave that Colts game, you know, in the fourth quarter with, you know, to be checked for a concussion. That game was already in hand. So Blake got a lot of snaps that he may not have normally gotten in that situation. And then you fast forward to this past Sunday against the Bengals. And once again, they pulled Gay out of the game early there during that final series there. So, you know, it's hard. I guess what I'm saying is it'll be interesting to see what the rotation is if the game is close in the fourth quarter. Because we already know how it's being used after the first three series. I mean, it's Cockrell, Gay, and Boykin in the nickel, and then with Blake seeing very, very few snaps in the middle of the game.
And I would think it's a bit close in the fourth quarter. He's not playing. And I'll disagree because I'll bet we see Boykin early in the game this week. I just think that they said, you know what, it was just one game. We'll give him a chance to redeem himself again, and it didn't work. So if they do it again, then it's just not that. You're right. You'll be right that that's how obviously their plan going forward, but that plan doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
So you're saying this could be the game that we don't see Antoine Blake start in the nickel?
I'm just hoping.
I know you are. So are the 10,000 people listening to this podcast right now. But you know damn good and well that's not going to happen, right?
I'm just going to hope. I'll just leave it at that.
I mean, he flat out told either that or he's a liar because he told you that we got a rotation there and we're going to play all guys largely at the end. We want to utilize all guys in an effort to spread the labor around and maybe get more quality contributions and special teams from all guys. So our approach hadn't changed, and from a week ago, blah, blah, blah. Not going to get into the minutia. So, We'll see, but I wouldn't hold your breath at this point, David. I would expect Blake to be out there the first couple, two, three series. In fact, maybe the first play that Antoine Blake gets burned and he comes out of the game. Hopefully it's just not for a 60-whatever yard touchdown.
Yeah, your logic makes sense. I mean, that does seem to be how Mike's thinking. Dave, was there anything else in the press conference that caught your attention?
A little bit of praise there for Robert Golden, but I mean, if you go back and look at that final drive, right? Golden has given this team some good snaps. Where I seem to worry about Golden the most now, David, to be quite honest with you, is in the red zone, right? I mean, go back and look at that. It was a garbage touchdown late in the game, but it's still a pride factor and a touchdown nonetheless. If you go back and look at the all 22 on that, That's Golden getting frozen by A.J. McCarron, who looked left before that. That's a quarter's coverage right there because you had two corners off the line in that situation, two safeties in the middle of the field. You had James Harrison dropping to the middle, looking at the back of the defense, dropping to the middle right. You had Vince Williams. Now, Vince's spot on the field could have been – he probably could have dropped a little bit more to his left on that play to kind of shrink that window there. And then Sean Spence, off the line of scrimmage, he has that curl flat responsibility on that as well, too. But if you go back and look at that thing, almost like the play a couple years ago against Dallas, Robert Golden sitting there, surprised he didn't have a bucket of popcorn with him.
Yeah, he got, I don't know, I can't remember if it was Witten or a different receiver up to see him, but... Yeah, easy touchdown in that one. I would say that's about as effusive as Mike gets in his praise of players. And I think deservedly so. And I think his assessment was right. Golden has been a rapidly improving player that has given the Steelers useful snaps. He was a guy we didn't talk much about in the preseason, being a guy who would contribute in the base defense or any kind of sub-package football. We assumed it would be Shamarco Thomas, and Shamarco Thomas' name is not even brought up anymore. He is,
man, how is that?
He is a complete afterthought.
Man. Yeah, we were hoping that maybe he'd turn a corner this year, but, he just – evidently, he just can't – he doesn't have the – from the neck up, right?
I guess. I mean, we can debate whether size is a part in any of this, but he's got the speed. He can hit. But he doesn't have size, and apparently he just doesn't know what he's doing out in the field, which is unfortunate. And what's interesting about it is obviously the Steelers, after his first year, realized there was an issue because they stopped having him learn both safety positions to just focus on Troy's spot. And so he just learned one position. He wasn't used in sub-package. So he had a full year of tutelage to come into this year to be the guy. And he still couldn't figure it out.
And if he hadn't got it by now, right?
No, yeah, he's not good.
I mean, do we magically expect that light to come on, I don't know. I mean, he's still got another – he's still probably going to be on this team next year, right? I mean, he's going to have some competition. But, I guess we shouldn't call him a lock right now. He's far from that probably because his team – most definitely. And look, Robert Golden, I don't know how comfortable I would be with him starting next year either right now. We don't think Will Allen's going to be back next year. But
I would be shocked. Actually, let's do a little bit of that. Let's play a little roster game right now on guys who won't be back currently on the 53. Let's start on the offensive side. Will Darius Heyward-Bey be back?
He might get a
same deal.
Same deal, but he's not guaranteed to make the roster. I mean, if he's signed, he's a body, I'll say, is he on the 53 next year? No.
I agree. Will he come to camp with the Steelers, or will he sign somewhere else?
It's going to be Steelers or bust for him, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Offensive line. I mean, Stingley's not going to be back, but Hubbard will probably be back, right?
I think Stingley has a chance to come to camp, but it ends there. I mean, a lot of these guys, don't be surprised if they get the 1 year, veteran minimum, salary cap friendly, veteran discount qualifying contract because, you know, there's nothing really, you know, hurting the team from doing that.
Matt Spaeth, you offer him a deal?
He's already under contract.
I thought this was the second year of a two-year deal.
No, he's under contract next year.
He is under contract for another year, okay.
Right. For right around $1 million, I think, as well, too.
Jordan Todman? Apparently not, right?
Well, I mean, I think he gets an invite, but right now, who's?
Well, Fitzgerald Toussaint.
You don't like his chances of making a 53 right now, being Toussaint's getting a helmet.
Yeah, right. So he'd be okay. So offensively, it's there's not a lot of guys. I mean, you know, there's not going to be a lot of change in the offense. We know that. defensively, Cam Thomas is gone, right?
If he does, it's one of those. Once again, it's all these guys are veteran qualifying deals. You know,
James Harrison
under contract.
Okay, does he make the 53? Yes or no?
Yes. I mean, who else you got right now?
So all the linebackers are back. So you think it's the same group?
Obviously, you're probably going to have to draft another one. Work in.
Somebody's out then because they got 9 and 9 are coming back.
I don't know. James might just end up retiring, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he said. I don't know that I'd bring him back, to be honest. I don't think I'd bring him back, but
I mean, there's not huge cap savings there, but on does James really want to play for $1.25 million? Put his body through that? I mean, when's enough enough?
Yeah,
especially if
it's $1 million and he likes playing football, so. He wants to touch that sack record.
Yeah, and he might break it this year based on the competition the Steelers play in these final three games. He might break it Sunday against the Broncos.
All right, so quickly, one more. Will Allen gone, right?
Yeah. I mean, no even reason to invite him to camp, in my opinion.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are only four or five obvious roster spots where guys are gone. Everybody else pretty much coming back. So, you know, interesting. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, and we're going to talk to Troy Renk right now, and we'll probably put that at the end of the podcast. But Dave and I will come back and get into a little bit more of the press conference and some more discussion about playoff situation and what's going on around the league. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast, and, of course, it's Wednesday. And as we do every Wednesday, we get a beat writer from the opposing team, and we're pleased to be joined by Troy Renk, who covers the Denver Broncos for the Denver Post. Troy, thanks for taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
Troy, big picture here, covering the team, looking at it from 30,000 feet, one of the things that has surprised me is what a successful executive John Elway has been. I mean, he retires, he's in the car dealership business. He's obviously got the relationship with Pat Bowlen, moves into the front office and really takes control of the team. Tell me a little bit about how he runs the organization and whether you're at all surprised at how successful he's been.
I'm surprised he wanted to put the time into being an executive. He's made millions of dollars. He didn't have to do this because it's hard. If you're going to be a good GM, you got to put the time in and scout and do the player evaluations, and he enjoys that. His dad was a coach, Jack Elway, and John has always viewed football through the eyes of a coach. And a couple of things are interesting to me about the way John's done this. One, he did an apprenticeship leading the Arena Football League team, because when Mike Shanahan was here, there was no spot for John Elway. I mean,
right.
Shanahan was in charge of everything but the coffee, so there was no role for him. And then when Shanahan got fired, and then the complete debacle that was the Josh McDaniels era, they came to John Elway and said, hey, help us out and get us out of this rut. And Elway did that. And what was impressive about it, A, he was qualified in many ways, and he had front office experience in how he dealt with the Arena League. And secondly, he's built his teams around defense. If you look at every one of his first-round picks, they're defensive players. He understands that to win and to win big in the NFL, you got to keep the score down. Now, Peyton Manning had changed that for a few years, but John has always known in the back of his mind if they're going to sustain success, they have to be good defensively. So it's very admirable the way he's done this. He put the time in, he still puts the time in, and he thinks like a coach and an executive, not a former quarterback.
And talking about that and looking at it, obviously Peyton Manning was the big decision that they made as an organization to bring him in. And then in the offseason, the change of coach from John Fox to Gary Kubiak. Interesting, because Kubiak's obviously brought in a different offensive philosophy that maybe doesn't suit Peyton's skill set as well. Is there any bit of is it at all contentious between what's gone on this season, aside from Peyton's injury, just in terms of organizational philosophy, how the offense was going to be run, and Gary Kubiak coming in?
Well, not between Elway and Kubiak. Clearly, it wasn't the best fit for Manning. And it was a difficult offseason for Manning. He finished last year poorly. Then they asked him to take a $4 million pay cut that didn't go over well, as you can imagine, because when he had the greatest season in the history of the NFL, he didn't ask for a pay raise. But that's the NFL you live in. And he took the cut, and he could get that money back if he started and won and got him to the Super Bowl. But the reality is the offense doesn't fit. Is it contentious? No, they tried to make it work. It just doesn't fit Peyton Manning's skill set. I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's not like they're butting heads over it. They have tried. They've tried to incorporate Peyton's terminology with their terminology. They've let him audible. They've basically turned it into a hybrid system that just really doesn't work well, because they need the quarterback under center, and that's not Peyton's strength. If he does come back to play this year, which is a big if, you know, he's got to get healthy, they're going to have him stay under center part of the time, because they have not run the ball well out of the pistol. They've been awful. And when they don't run the ball well, defensive ends tee off on the line, which is average, and they just take, you know, the quarterbacks take hits. So, you know, they've tried. It's been a yeoman's effort. The reality is, though, you know, Brock Osweiler is clearly their future, and the offense looks different under Osweiler. Now, if Manning comes back, I think it's going to – they got to find another way to kind of blend it again, because they're not going back to the pistol. That's not working.
And can you just give us a – I know you haven't seen Wednesday's injury report yet. They haven't practiced yet. But can you just give us an update of generally where the Broncos are health-wise?
Well, they're in a better position than last week, because last week they had three safeties who were hurt, and David Bruton, T.J. Ward, and Omar Bolden. All three of those guys could play this week. I expect Bolden to play, who's a backup, but they need him. And T.J. Ward, I would expect to play. He might be limited, but – now, they signed two guys off the street in Josh Bush and Shiloh Kao, and Kao really hurt them last week with a couple of mistakes in special teams and in coverage. So those guys, you know, again, T.J. Ward, David Bruton, Bolden, all three could be back. I expect two of the three in Ward and Bolden to be back. Manning will practice today, but there's no – he won't play this week. He's expected to be inactive. And they're hoping to get Danny Trevathan, one of their top linebackers, back, who was missed last week in the concussion protocol.
Troy, when you look at offensively, and more specifically with Brock Osweiler there, when you look at him on tape, he almost comes off as a very tall Alex Smith, a game manager of sorts. And when you go back and look at what he's tried to do with the deep ball so far, I think his stats on passes of over 15 yards down the field, he's just 4 for 21. Is he just, do you view him more as an Alex Smith game manager, you know, too tight end, you know, classic, really, I guess you'd call it a classic Gary Kubiak type of quarterback? I mean, is that how you view him, and why the problems getting the ball down the field?
Well, I think for now he's more like that, because the defense is so good. They have the best defense in football pretty much by any statistical measure. So they've asked him to play to the defense, play the field position game. They're taking fewer shots downfield. He's got to hit some of those. So you bring up the stats, and it's exactly right. I mean, the whole thing is built on play action, bootleg, and then hit a couple big shots down the field. And they've missed those the last couple weeks, and that's really why they've gone 23 straight possessions without an offensive touchdown, is they haven't been unable to make the defense loosen up, take the lid off of it. But I'm not going to say he's more than Alex Smith, because Alex Smith had a nice career. He's captain check down. He never does anything risky, you know, and Smith. You know, I think they want the high side of Osweiler to be closer to Joe Flacco, because that's more of his skill set. I mean, Osweiler's got a big, big arm. It's just, remember, he sat for 3.5 years. This will be his fifth game he's ever started, and he only started a handful of games in college. So he's still learning the position. But he'll get better. Whether that happens this year and they can microwave it, I don't know. But they don't want him just to be a game manager. They want more than that, but part of it is where they are in the season with his defense.
when you look at Emmanuel Sanders, this will be marking his return to Heinz Field since he left a couple years ago, free agency, of course, signed with the Broncos. He really has – we loved him here in Pittsburgh. Or a lot of people did. You know, loved him for his route running and his aggressive blocking style. And really seems to have hit his ceiling now with the Broncos. But the last couple weeks really have – I mean, has he had problems adjusting to Os Waller and kind of the route combinations that they're using, you know, over the course of the last several weeks?
Well, he was hurt. That was the issue. When Osweiler took over in the Kansas City game, that's where, you know, Emmanuel Sanders had been dealing with an ankle injury. He played in the Kansas City game, wasn't himself. He set out the Chicago game, and he's just now getting to full strength. Now, they've worked together. They spend time after practice. They've got a good relationship, especially for, you know, given that Brock was mainly with second teamers throughout the season, even though he got some Wednesday practices for Manning in, you know, Manning's place. But fans love Emmanuel Sanders here. He's their toughest guy. You could argue he might be their toughest player. And he's got good hands. I mean, they've had issues with drops with Demaryius Thomas, Vernon Davis, and go down the list. And Emmanuel Sanders, for me, has been their offensive MVP. But when you ask about has it been an issue with Osweiler, it really hasn't. It's just an issue of as Osweiler came back, Emmanuel Sanders was dealing with a high ankle sprain. So I think you'll see those two get better over these last 3 weeks. But Sanders has been their most consistent offensive player this year.
In terms of offensive line play, what are the Broncos getting out of their O-line so far?
Yeah, not enough, but there's really no great solution at this point. They've had some injuries. They lost their starting left tackle, Ryan Clady, in minicamp. Yep. Then they lost their rookie starting left tackle, Ty Sambralo, after the third game of the season with a rotator cuff, labrum injury. And so that's cost them. I mean, Ryan Harris has played okay at left tackle at times. Right tackle Michael Schofield, as everyone watched on the game against the Raiders, he gave up four of Khalil Mack's 5 sacks were against him. Schofield's a pretty good run blocker, a kid from Michigan, can go move forward. He's not great in pass protection, and he's really not great when the other team knows coming out of the huddle that the Broncos are passing.
Right.
Evan Mathis and Louis Vasquez, a guard, have been banged up. They have a kid, Max Garcia, that's played a lot and they like. And Matt Paradis, again, if you grade him out, he's probably been their best guy at center. He was a practice squad kid from Boise State last year. He's been solid. They just when they run the ball, they're fine. And when they don't, the line gets exposed in pass protection.
Yeah, C.J. Anderson, a tough early start to the year. Everybody saw that game on national TV that they won where he was fantastic. Up and down, but is he going to get the bulk of the work?
I don't know bulk of the work because he's still coming off an ankle injury. He will play. He was active last week, did not play, and they missed him in pass protection. Because they're easily their best running back in pass protection. But bulk of the work, I wouldn't say that. I mean, he and Hillman, throughout the season, no matter who starts, they both finish with about the same number of carries. So, you know, I would think CJ gets 12 to 15 carries. That's pretty much where it's been ending all year.
DeMarcus Ware back healthy again. I know he's the one that missed some games over there, right?
Yeah, he was out 4 games. He played last week, 15 plays. In basically pass rush only situations, he will be more in the base defense this week. He's on a pitch count, if you will, and I would expect him to be around 25 to 30 plays. But he came out of the game healthy. He's got a back issue. They're really trying to carefully manage because they don't want to lose him for the playoffs. But, again, 15 plays last week. He's anticipating 25 to 30 plays this week.
When you look at this Broncos defense, not only statistically, but on tape, and especially on the back end with Chris Harrison and Aqib Talib, very, very impressive. And this is probably kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg. But, you know, what's better here, the back end or the front end of this defense?
Well, they play off each other, and Von Miller is playing out of his mind right now. He's got sacks in 5 straight games. And when they get pressure, they're really good. But their corners would be good with really any front. I mean, Chris Harrison and Aqib Talib are top corners. Chris Harris hasn't given up a touchdown pass in 2-plus years. I mean, he is as good as it gets in coverage. I'm sure he's going to get a heavy dose of Antonio Brown, and that'll be a great matchup. And
will he follow him around, or are they going to stay on sides?
I think he'll follow him around, but they do mix it up. But the Broncos aren't like Richard Sherman's going to stay on the side. Chris Harris will move. He grew up in the defense playing slot guys, so he's comfortable moving around. I would think he's going to get the bulk of the coverage against Brown with Tlaib on Bryant because Bryant's a bigger receiver. The Broncos secondary is really good. And with T.J. Ward's back and close to healthy, they hit, they bring the noise. They're not afraid to lay you out, and they go for the ball. I mean, they're looking to score on interceptions. They're not looking to just get picks. So, but, yeah, they work together. And with DeMarcus Ware back with Miller, that's helping. But this secondary, I'm telling you, would be good no matter what team you put them on.
We're talking with Troy Rank, who covers the Broncos for the Denver Post. You can follow him on Twitter, at Troy Rank, R-E-N-C-K. Troy, first-round pick Shane Ray. Obviously, some issues coming out of the draft about where he would go and some of that stuff. Solid first year for him?
He's done okay. He's basically a niche pass rusher. They haven't needed him to play a lot until DeMarcus went down. He got a few more snaps. He's got a great burst, great first step. You can see the potential with Ray. He missed a couple weeks with a knee injury that slowed him down a little bit in the middle of the season. But he's been what you would expect for a first-round pick on a team that has superstars. Now, if he had joined the Browns or, another Jaguars or something, we'd probably hear more about him. He'd probably have 8 or 9 sacks. The reality is on this defense, he's a third, fourth option as a pass rushing end. So he's only going to get, 15 to 25 plays to really show himself. So, but he's done fine. He's done fine. They like his future.
Well, when you look at, I tell you, coming out of Colorado State, Shaquille Barrett, I really had the Steelers pegged at either drafting him late or being able to sign him as an undrafted free agent. Of course, he has, the links to Joey Porter, who I believe was a graduate assistant coach there for a season, and Shaquille Barrett's numbers really went through the roof there. Is Shaquille even hit his ceiling yet? I mean, is this a kid that still has room for improvement there? And what have you observed from him this year, really first year really seeing considerable playing time?
Yeah, he's still trending up. The arrow's pointing up. He came out of college, as you mentioned, after working with Joey Porter, former Steelers great. He came out of college able to rush the passer, but what he did in this offseason, they basically told him, you have pass rushing skills, you need to change your body type. He was just too big, kind of thick, and he took it seriously. His wife and family went back to Omaha where they're from, and he stayed in Denver and basically worked out every day for a couple months leading up to minicamp, and that changed everything. He went from already being a good pass rusher to now having the body type and the athleticism that was missing. And so he played great early. He's had big moments. He's probably, when you look at it, he might make DeMarcus Ware expendable. Ware's got one more year on his contract, but, at a pretty high number. And with Ray and Barrett there, you wonder, can they really afford to bring Ware back? But, yeah, Barrett has played really well, and it started like the first day of training camp. So I'm not going to say I'm surprised. When you look at the season, you're surprised. But if you had seen how he worked in the offseason and the first day of training camp, you were like, okay, this guy's different. And players were saying that, like, this guy's going to help us this year. They were saying that as far back as, August 1st.
Yeah, he's impressed, and I look for. I don't know if you have a feature story planned, for the weekend or whatnot, for the link from Barrett to Joey Porter. But I really have enjoyed watching him play, and like I said, coming out of the draft, he looked like a Steelers linebacker. It's good to see him excel with Denver so far.
Yeah, good kid, and because he's homegrown, a lot of fans here, and he was a star at Colorado State. And, again, he was trending upward. It tells you how much he's trending upward that he changed agents to Drew Rosenhaus a couple of weeks ago.
Oh. nice. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, just generally, Troy, special teams, the Steelers special teams, we haven't seen a lot in the return game. AB had a punt return for a touchdown a couple of weeks ago. Everybody saw the celebration. But they've gotten really very little out of the kick return game and not much out of the punt return game. Conversely, the Steelers have not given up much in terms of returns. They've been very solid in terms of their coverage units. Their young kicker's done very well. The punter's been okay. Broncos special teams?
Yeah, they haven't been as good as they'd like recently. Their punter's been struggling. Britton Colquitt, he ranks in the middle of the pack to bottom third in some categories, which is really inexcusable when you're kicking half your games at altitude. Brandon McManus has been the star of their special teams, but he's missed the field goal in 3 straight games. I mean, he was among MVP honors for this team through 9 weeks. And then he's hit, not I would say hit the skids because he's missing long field goals, but I guess he, you know, he raised the bar so high that he could make anything over 50. That now he's missed field goals in three straight. That's hurt them. Their punt return game is not very good. Emmanuel Sanders fumbled last week. I don't know why they continue to use him back there. Not because of that, just because of the injury risk. I mean, at this point, they'd be better off just getting the guy to catch the ball, but which is kind of what Emmanuel's been doing for the most part. But if Omar Bolden comes back, he can be electrifying, but he's dealing with a hamstring. He's got a long punt return this year against the Colts. He has moments. Kick return, they've gotten they're average. They're average. So the Broncos aren't going to win a game like the Eagles or something on special teams. They just kind of try to hold serve, really. They cover well, though. On the defensive side of special teams, they cover well. That has been a strength, but they don't really attack on the offensive side of special teams.
Troy, man, that's great insights. Let me just ask you, if I have the playoff scenarios correct, is it correct that if the Broncos were to lose to the Steelers and the Bengals and the Chiefs win out, the Broncos don't win the division?
That would be correct because of the Chiefs' AFC record, because they split head-to-head. Denver beat them in Kansas City, and Kansas City beat them in Denver. And then Chiefs would have a better AFC division record, so they would win the division. And, you know, that's crazy as that sounds. 3-4 weeks ago, the Chiefs' schedule sets up for them to win out. The Broncos need to win two of their three. And if they lost in Pittsburgh, it wouldn't be the worst thing, other than if Osweiler plays terrible and then they have a quarterback controversy on Monday. But the problem is then the whole season starts to rest on that Bengals game. You know, that's a huge game. And they catch a break with, obviously, Andy Dalton not expected to play.
Yeah, and for the Steelers, the reason that's significant, obviously, if the Steelers can win this game when they go to playoff tiebreakers, if the Jets, Steelers, and Broncos are there at 11-5, the Steelers win that and become the fifth seed and get the AFC South. So there's a ton riding on this game for both teams in that respect in terms of how it all ends up. So I agree with you on the Chiefs. We've been talking about it for weeks, that their scenario, and that's why that Oakland game is now looks so pivotal for the Broncos. So what's your thought? The Broncos come in and win this game in Pittsburgh?
I don't know that they can win this game this week. I really don't. I think it's going to be close because every game they play, as someone who's riding on deadline all the time, every game this year but one has come down to the final drive. So I expect it to be close. I just don't know that they can score enough offensively. The way they've won on the road, now they're going for a seventh road win. That would be a franchise record. They've never done it, which they've had some unbelievable teams, especially the two Super Bowl teams. And this would be their seventh road win. But when they won those games, it always involved a pick six, big turnover. In absence of that, I just don't know that they have enough offense to beat the Steelers right now. I mean, again, they haven't scored an offensive touchdown in 23 straight possessions. They've got to score two offensive touchdowns to have a chance to beat the Steelers. But I think it's going to be close. And if I had to guess right now, they lose a close game to the Steelers just based on where their offense is right now.
Wow, that's a great stat, 23 offensive possessions. I'm going to tweet that out like I looked it up. Troy, great insights, man. I will I'll make sure to introduce myself when I get over to the stadium on Sunday. Appreciate your time, and we'll tweet this out and look forward to, you know, talking to you again. Maybe these two match up in the playoffs.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Okay, we dropped Troy right into the middle of the podcast there because that's how it worked on our schedule. And, Dave, great insights from him, man. Really, really good conversation there.
Yeah, what about that stat?
Three straight offensive possessions without a touchdown for the Broncos.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I've already talked about the deep ball stats already. You know, I mentioned them to Troy. 4 of 21 on balls thrown down the field. Do you think you think he gets a little healthier against the Steelers defense, though, with that deep ball?
Not a bad team to try it against.
Absolutely not, for sure. The defense. I think the Steelers' offense versus the Broncos' defense is going to be probably the biggest matchup in this game. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, one of the best of the season. I mean, not just for I think for anybody watching games. Consensus around the league is the Steelers are, if not the best, one of the best offenses in the NFL, and I think most people think the Broncos have the best defense in the NFL. So, I think the whole country will be focused on that one.
All right. So what do we have left over from the Mike Tomlin? Did we hit everything with Mike Tomlin?
You know, I didn't think there was a lot of juicy stuff coming out of the Tomlin presser this week. You hit on the golden stuff, and we talked about kind of the rotation on the defense. So I'm not sure there was too much more. We talked about the Denver playoff scenario, and we kind of covered some of the Steelers stuff there. I think everybody's aware now that if the Steelers win out, they're in. They'll have the tiebreaker over the Jets. If the Steelers and the Jets match up with the same record, assuming the Jets lose to the Patriots or to the Bills, not this week to the Cowboys, but if they lose one of those games, the tiebreakers will all go the Steelers' way. So, what, you know, the Jets losing this week would be great because, you know, then the Steelers, you know, have to be a game up on them. But it's really them losing to New England or Buffalo that's more significant. And then I think everybody understands the rest of it. Kansas City's in the driver's seat. And the Bengals really, if they win one of their three games, they got the division clinched.
Yeah, and really, when you look at it in short, you hit on it. The Steelers right now, even though they're the number seven seed, they control their own destiny. Win out and they're in. And here's the thing. You laid it out good. You know, with them having to lose. Basically, here's the thing. They can lose to Denver. I mean, you don't want that to happen, but they can lose to Denver as long as they win against Baltimore and Cleveland to close out the season, as long as the Jets lose one of those.
As long as the Pats take care of business.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, the worst thing that can happen is for the Jets to run the table, because you get into that whole the common games, the common opponents, record against common opponents is what's probably going to ultimately decide this thing if both the Steelers and the Jets are tied. Now, we can still talk about, you know, the potential to win the division. The good news is if the Steelers win on Sunday, the Bengals still cannot clinch the AFC North. Now, they can clinch a playoff spot, but they can't clinch the AFC North as long as the Steelers keep winning. Now, of course, that changes, you know, in Week 16. I think if the Bengals win that game, which, oh, by the way, that's against the Broncos. I don't know. I mean, this is set up to have a little bit of drama to it, even though the Bengals, you know, here, you know, 4 weeks ago were thinking, you can kiss the division goodbye, right? And it just goes to show you how foolish it is at the beginning of the season to go game by game and try to pick these things, right?
Yeah, it is. And we just see the impact of injuries in the NFL. I mean, look, it's every team has suffered injuries. I mean, across, you know, you can't pick a team that hasn't. Quarterbacks have gone down more this year than I think in the recent past since the rules have been changed to protect quarterbacks. We've seen a lot of the quarterbacks miss time. And, yeah, we're throwing darts at the beginning of the season. I mean, you look at how the Falcons started the season. Look at what we thought of the Saints at the beginning of the season. I think a lot of people thought the Carolina Panthers would have a losing record on the season. You know, that's just one division. It'd be kind of a prime example of, you know, how we often get this stuff wrong. I think we were all pretty accurate about the AFC North, though. I think you and I both expected the Ravens to take a step back. We knew the Bengals were really talented, thought the Steelers would be good, and the Browns were a crapshoot. And that's the one, you know, there's been some consistency in that division. But, yeah, you're dead on about that.
And, I mean, look, I mean, this thing isn't over yet. We saw what McCarron, we both agreed that McCarron played a decent game. But, I mean, let's not forget that this is a Steelers defense that has made a few quarterbacks look good this year, especially when talking about deep ball and say what you will. The last drive, obviously, what was 81 passing yard. I think McCarron went 8 for 8 for 81 passing yards on that final drive. So I don't know how much credence you want to give to that. I guess what I'm saying is there a chance that Cleveland loses two of their final three?
Cincinnati. Sure, there's a chance, but I don't see it. I mean, this would be the game that would be the one. And then the question is, if you're a Steeler fan, let's put it this way. If the Bengals win this week, you are definitely rooting for the Bengals to beat the Broncos. The question is, if the Bengals don't win this week, who are you rooting for in the Broncos and the Bengals? That's going to be an interesting one, because you still assume the Bengals are going to win their last game.
Yeah, I mean, who's Baltimore? I mean, Baltimore is really – I mean, it seems like every week they're putting somebody else on IR. I mean, put it this way, how embarrassing should the Steelers be if they don't win their final two games?
Yeah, look, for sure. They should take care of business. But I will say Johnny Manziel has changed the perception of who he is really quickly in his last two games between what he did against the Steelers and then obviously he gets benched for 2 weeks. Wow, sorry, losing my voice here. And then comes back against this past week against San Francisco and plays another pretty good game. I think the perception of Johnny being a guy who's out of the league next year has totally gone away. And now it's a question of, is he going to be on the Browns roster as potentially the starting QB, or, does he get traded to somebody like the Cowboys to be, Romo's backup and possible heir apparent or something like that. But Johnny Manziel scares me a little bit. The Browns don't scare me, but Johnny scares me more than the Ravens do.
Look, Matt Schaub, he might not even – we'll see if he's even able to play. I mean, they had to go out and sign – who was it? All the Houston Texans, Mallett. They signed Ryan Mallett yesterday. That's how bad things – I mean, you're talking about Jimmy Clausen and Ryan Mallett right now.
Sign me up for that.
for sure. The only drawback is those are the same two that might see time against the Bengals. As well. So, yeah, a lot needs to happen for the Steelers still to win a division. I'm not going to hold my breath still. Now we'll talk definitely if the Bengals drop this game out west of the 49ers. And, look, that's a long way to go, right? I mean, we're talking about a team having to go out west to play a team that's playing better, and you just lost. I mean, and they're having to play with their backup quarterback. So I don't think it's unthinkable to think that – the Bengals could stumble this week.
Sure. But you're just not impossible. Absolutely. I think they win, but Jim Tomsula has this team playing better football. Blaine Gabbert's playing has resurrected his career a little bit. If I don't know who's going to play running back for San Francisco. Carlos Hyde's out for the year now. If they can run the ball a little bit, maybe they have a chance.
All right, what do you think about Ben's comments on the radio from Tuesday?
Accurate. No doubt, you and I agree that perfect wasn't pushed, that it was intentional. And, you put up the great GIF. I used it in the article that I wrote. And then I was looking at it again last night, and I tweeted out that obviously Ben saw something in his peripheral vision. Because if you watch how Ben throws the football, he steps into his throws. And, if you watch any baseball pitcher or anybody else, you your right leg comes up. As you plant your left leg, you follow through, your right leg comes up. But in this play, Ben, physically moves his leg all the way forward back in front of his plant foot now, in front of his left foot, because he, in his peripheral vision, he clearly knows that something's coming off the right side.
Yeah, I mean, he avoided disaster there for sure. If that cleat sticks in the ground, what happens? I mean,
we might be looking at Landry Jones.
Yeah, most definitely. I won't be shocked if Perfect's not fine, but I don't see how they can't, I guess, is how I should phrase that. And according to Ed Werder on Tuesday, the league is looking into that. And we should know, I mean, these type things aren't widely reported, but you would think if Perfect gets a FedEx envelope today, he's going to tell the media about it, right?
Yeah, I think we'll know. That'll get out for sure.
All right. Anything else we got to get to before we kind of wrap it up here and get on to Friday?
No, I think that covers it. Great recap from Troy, and we'll get into kind of the schematics and the game design and how we think the Steelers should attack this defense and vice versa when we do it Friday.
Yeah, and we got two new contributors at Steelers Depot as well too. And in fact, one of them, Zach Grassinger, just posted. He's our offensive line, defensive line specialist. You may have read his work before at the Football Educator. He's now doing some breakdowns for us. He's got a great offensive line breakdown on the Steelers from their game this past weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals. So please get yourself over to Steelers Depot and check that out. And Josh Carney also. also a new contributor for us, has a breakdown on the Steelers' inside linebackers from this game as well, too. And as always, Matthew Marksy pumping out the content during the day. Alex Kozora doing what he does. And I kind of do my thing there as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter, at David M. Todd. You can follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. For the first time, David, I don't think we got any donations in between shows. So everybody must be
Christmas shopping. Christmas shopping.
Christmas shopping.
Take a
right
parking lounger.
I hear you. If you would like to donate to the podcast over the holidays, you can go to SteelersDepot.com. Upper right-hand corner in the navigation bar, you'll see a donate button, and that will take you to PayPal. Thanks again to Troy today. Great guest again for us. And David, let's talk some more on Friday.
Sounds good. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.